your left brain and your right brain. Do you know that you have many parts to your brain and they all do different things? It's almost like you have different brains with minds of their own, but we can help them all get along and help one another. Our right brain listens to our body and other parts of our brain and knows about our big feelings, like when we're happy or brave or scared or sad or really mad. It's important that we pay attention to these feelings and talk about them. Sometimes when we're upset and we don't talk about it, our feelings can build and build inside us, like a huge wave that washes over us and makes us say or do things we don't mean. But the left brain can help put our feelings into words. Then our whole brain can work together as a team and we can calm down. For example, Annie got sick and had to miss her friend's birthday party. She was so mad about staying home that a huge anger wave grew and grew and was about to crash down on her. Annie's dad helped her talk about what she was feeling. When she used her words to say how she felt, her left brain helped her surf the big anger wave from her right brain, and she rode it to shore, calm and happy.
Integrating ourselves, connecting our left and right brain. Now that you know more about the left and right sides of the brain, think about your own integration. When it comes to parenting, are you too right brain dominant? Do you frequently get swept up in emotional floods, leaving your children drenched with your own chaos and fear? Or maybe your tendency is to live in a left brain emotional desert, so you are rigid in your reactions and have a hard time reading and responding to your children's emotions and needs. Here are the words of a mom we know who realized that she was primarily interacting with her young son using only one side of her own brain. I was brought up in a military family. Needless to say, I'm not very touchy-feely. I'm a veterinarian and a trained problem solver, which doesn't help me in the empathy department. When my son would cry or become upset, I would try to get him to settle down so I could help him solve the problem. This was not helpful and sometimes exacerbated the crying, so I would walk away and wait until he calmed down. Recently, I learned about trying to connect emotionally first, right brain to right brain, which was totally foreign to me. Now, I hold my son, listen, and even try and help him tell his story using both the left and right brain together. Then we talk about the behavior or solve the problem. Now I try to remember to connect first and solve second. It took some practice, but when I related to my son emotionally first, using my right brain along with my left, instead of using only my left, everything else went more smoothly and our relationship in general improved as well. This mother realized that by ignoring parts of her own right brain, she was missing out on important opportunities to connect with her son and to enhance the development of his right brain. One of the best ways to promote integration in our children is to become better integrated ourselves. We'll discuss this more fully in Chapter 6 when we explain mirror neurons. When right and left brain are integrated, we can approach parenting from both a grounded, left-brained, rational place, one that lets us make important decisions, solve problems, and enforce boundaries, and from a right-brained, emotionally connected place where we are aware of the feelings and sensations of our bodies and emotions so we can lovingly respond to our children's needs. Then, we'll be parenting with our whole brain.
Chapter 3. Building the Staircase of the Mind. Integrating the upstairs and downstairs brain. One afternoon, Jill heard yelling and commotion in the bedroom of her 6-year-old, Grant. 4-year-old Gracie had found her brother's treasure box and taken his most rarest crystal, which she then lost. Jill arrived just in time to hear Gracie say in her most spiteful voice, "It's just a dumb rock, and I'm glad I lost it." Jill looked at her young son, fists clenched and face turning red. You've probably experienced just such a moment, where a situation with your child is delicately balanced and is about to turn ugly. Things could still be salvaged and tip toward a good and peaceful resolution, or they could tilt in the other direction, devolving into chaos, anarchy, even violence. And it all depends on your little darling controlling an impulse, calming some big feelings, making a good decision. Yikes! In this case, Jill immediately saw signs of what was coming. Grant was losing control and was not going to make a good decision. She saw the fury in his eyes and heard the beginnings of a barbaric growl begin to emerge from his throat. She matched him step for step as he raced across the few feet between himself and his sister. Fortunately, Jill was quicker and intercepted Grant before he reached Gracie. She picked him up and held him close as his punches and kicks flailed wildly in the air, Grant screaming all the while. When he finally stopped fighting, Jill set him down. Through his tears, he looked at his sister, who actually adored and idolized him, and calmly uttered the phrase, "You're the worst sister in the world." As Jill told me this story, she explained that this last verbal torpedo had hit its mark and produced the dramatic tears from Gracie that Grant had hoped for. Still, Jill was glad that she had been there, or her son likely would have caused physical, not just emotional pain. The question she asked me is one that parents ask us frequently. I can't be with my kids every second of the day. How do I teach them to do the right thing and control themselves, even when I'm not around? One of the most important skills we can teach our kids is to make good decisions in high emotion situations like the one Grant faced here. We want them to pause before acting, to consider consequences, to think about the feelings of others, to make ethical and moral judgments. Sometimes they come through with the kind of behavior that makes us proud, and sometimes they don't. What is it that makes our kids choose their actions so wisely in certain moments and so poorly in others? Why do certain situations leave us patting our children on the back and others leave us throwing our hands in the air? Well, there are some pretty good reasons based on what's going on in the higher and lower parts of a child's brain.
The mental staircase, integrating the upstairs and downstairs brain. We can talk about the brain in many ways. In Chapter 2, we focused on its two hemispheres, the left and the right. Now we want to look at it from top to bottom, or actually, from bottom to top. Imagine that your brain is a house with both a downstairs and an upstairs. The downstairs brain includes the brainstem and the limbic region, which are located in the lower parts of the brain, from the top of your neck to about the bridge of your nose. Scientists talk about these lower areas as being more primitive because they are responsible for basic functions, like breathing and blinking, for innate reactions and impulses, like fight and flight, and for strong emotions, like anger and fear. Whenever you instinctually flinch because a little league foul ball flies into the stands, your downstairs brain is doing its job. The same goes for when your face goes red with fury because, after 20 minutes of convincing your kindergartner that the dentist's office won't be scary, the dental assistant enters the room and announces in front of your daughter, "We'll need to give her a shot to numb her." Your anger, along with other strong emotions and bodily functions and instincts, springs from your downstairs brain. It's like the first floor of a house where so many of a family's basic needs are met. There, you'll almost always find a kitchen, a dining room, a bathroom, and so on. Basic necessities get taken care of downstairs. Your upstairs brain is completely different. It's made up of the cerebral cortex and its various parts, particularly the ones directly behind your forehead, including what's called the middle prefrontal cortex. Unlike your more basic downstairs brain, the upstairs brain is more evolved and can give you a fuller perspective on your world. You might imagine it as a light-filled second-story study or library full of windows and skylights that allow you to see things more clearly. This is where more intricate mental processes take place, like thinking, imagining, and planning. Whereas the downstairs brain is primitive, the upstairs brain is highly sophisticated, controlling some of your most important higher-order and analytical thinking. Because of its sophistication and complexity, it is responsible for producing many of the characteristics we hope to see in our kids. Sound decision-making and planning. Control over emotions and body. Self-understanding. Empathy. Morality. A child whose upstairs brain is properly functioning will demonstrate some of the most important characteristics of a mature and healthy human being. We're not saying she'll be superhuman or never display childish behavior. But when a child's upstairs brain is working well, she can regulate her emotions, consider consequences, think before acting, and consider how others feel. All of which will help her thrive in different areas of her life, as well as help her family survive day-to-day difficulties. As you might expect, a person's brain works best when the upstairs and downstairs are integrated with each other. So a parent's goal should be to help build and reinforce the metaphorical stairway that connects the child's upper and lower brain so that the two can work as a team. When a fully functioning staircase is in place, the upper and lower parts of the brain are vertically integrated. That means that the upstairs can monitor the actions of the downstairs and help calm the strong reactions, impulses, and emotions that originate there. But vertical integration works in the other direction too, with the downstairs brain and the body, the house's foundation, making important bottom-up contributions. After all, we don't want significant upstairs decisions being made in some sort of vacuum that's devoid of input from our emotions, our instincts, and our bodies. Instead, we need to consider our emotional and physical feelings, which originate downstairs, before using the upstairs to decide on a course of action. Once again, then, integration allows for a free flow between the lower and higher parts of our brain. It helps build the stairway so that all the different parts of our brain can be coordinated and work together as a whole. The unfinished upstairs, setting appropriate expectations for your kids. Even though we will want to help build this metaphorical staircase in our child's brain, there are two important reasons to maintain realistic expectations when it comes to integration. The first is developmental. While the downstairs brain is well developed even at birth, the upstairs brain isn't fully mature until a person reaches his mid-20s. In fact, it's one of the last parts of the brain to develop. The upstairs brain remains under massive construction for the first few years of life. Then, during the teen years, undergoes an extensive remodel that lasts into adulthood. Just imagine the downstairs of a house that is complete and fully furnished. But when you look up at the second floor, you see that it is unfinished and littered with construction tools. You can even see patches of the sky where the roof hasn't been completed yet. That's your child's upstairs brain, a work in progress. This is really important information for parents to understand, because it means that all of the abilities on the list above, the behaviors and skills we want and expect our kids to demonstrate, like sound decision-making, control of their emotions and bodies, empathy, self-understanding, and morality, are dependent on a part of their brain that hasn't fully developed yet. Since the upstairs brain is still under construction, it isn't capable of fully functioning all the time, meaning that it can't be integrated with the downstairs brain and consistently work at its best. As a result, kids are prone to getting trapped downstairs without the use of their upstairs brain, which results in them flying off the handle, making poor decisions, and showing a general lack of empathy and self-understanding.